this point.
All right, a little prayer. Good morning, God. You're ushering in another day untouched and freshly new. So here we come. Thank you, Lord, for you. I forgot it. I knew I would. Let me try it one more time. Good morning, God. You're ushering in another day untouched and freshly new. So here we come and ask you, God, if you'll renew us too. Forgive the many errors that we made yesterday. And help us once again, dear Lord, to walk closer in your way. But, Father, we are well aware we can't make it on our own. So take our hands and hold them tight, for we can't walk alone. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
My name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mickey.
And I'm Nate. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nate. So we're on step 11, which is incredible. I have a real story to tell on this one. I'm sure we probably all do. But we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So I start every morning. Not that I am the standard of anything. I just start every morning and I ask God to direct my thinking. I mean, when my eyes come open, please direct my thinking. I ask especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. The reason I do it first thing is because otherwise I wake up with an alcoholic in charge of my life, and we go from there. And it's not that God isn't there, but I want to plug in and make sure we start this right. Then I want to talk about meditation. I had an expectation of meditation that I was going to get blissed out. So I would try meditation and I got nothing. No liftoff, zero. No levitation. I smelled no roses. I got nothing. So I thought meditation doesn't work for me. I tried transcendental meditation, breathing meditation, walking meditation. Nothing. So I just canned it. I thought, well, I'll pray, and that's all going to work out fine. And it kept me alive, along with the other step work, for 30 years. So for 30 years, I did not meditate. Then I got this sponsor, who is Gary, who's coming to do your Fellowship of the Spirit conference. And Gary meditated. And so he started encouraging me to meditate. No, I got Marty before him. And you know, it says if you want what we have, right? Well, I wanted what Marty had. Marty was an ex-armed robber and got an indeterminate sentence in the California penal system and was a good boy in prison and came out and he fixed Hewlett-Packard huge, great big machines for the rest of his career. And he was a wonderful man. And here was the key. He had a very sweet spirit. He just had this wonderful, inviting, kind spirit. And I wanted what Marty had. And so I would call Marty, and I was just starting out in boot making, and I'd say, Marty, wah, about the boots, you know. And it's, oh, my God, about the boots. And Marty would listen very kindly every time. And he would say two things to me. One of them, he'd say, Mickey, it ain't about the boots. And the second thing he'd ask me is, did you meditate today? Now, I had already given him the whole deal. I don't meditate, right? Don't you understand? I don't meditate. And Marty goes, yeah, yeah. And so the next time I'd call him, we'd go through the exact same dance. And he'd ask me, did you meditate? And I said, no. And finally, I got sick of answering that no. And so I thought, well, I'll dive in for something. And I had heard about a form of meditation in which you plant your rear end in a chair and you sit there for X amount of time. You try to clear your mind, which I got to tell you right now is not happening with this carbon unit. I got monkey mind, which means that my mind jumps from tree to tree to tree, and it never stops the entire time I'm meditating. My wife, on the other hand, is sitting over in her chair, and she's going, I said, how's your meditation? I went to a place where I wasn't a wife, I wasn't a mother, I wasn't a woman, and I'm having all this. You know, and I'm still working on third gear in our car. Forget it. And one of the really nice things about being married for me is that I have this living mirror. And I can never see what's happening in my life. I don't know how it is for you guys, but I am not a good witness for how I'm doing. There's a joke, you know, the old greeting in AA is, you're fine, how am I? Right? Anyway, so so I would just do it out of obedience. I would sit my rear in that chair. I start out with 5 minutes, and then I went to 10 minutes, and then I tried, and then I go to 15, and then I tried 20, and I've settled on 15. So I sit down for 15 minutes. During that time, my mind is rocking and rolling the whole time. But what I'm doing is I'm giving God the first fruits of my day. God gave me back my life. I'm giving him the first 15 minutes of this day. We're going to start there. And this really strange thing started to happen. First of all, I started to get a report card from my wife. And the report card was, Mickey, you seem a lot calmer. You seem like your spirit is a little sweeter. I'm going, really? This is great. And then it got stranger and stranger. So it goes like this. If I don't meditate in the morning, within 15 minutes to 45 minutes, I turn into a rattlesnake. Everything irritates the hell out of me. I can't function well. I'm angry. I'm irritable, discontent. I'm going like, wait a minute, what is this? And I mean, it's locked in now. So I'm telling you, if somebody put a gun to my head and said you could have prayer or you could have meditation, I'd choose meditation. And I want to underline this. It's not because I'm blissed out in the experience. It's because of the effects of it. I get to be sort of the man I want to be. I always wanted to be. So I offer that to you because it's happened for my wife as well. She doesn't have the rattlesnake in her, so she can't revert. But I got the rattlesnake in me. And as far as prayer goes, and I'm talking about the morning now, we pray the Liturgy of the Hours from the Catholic Church. The same thing the monks do, what they call it lauds. And we do that, and it's cool because there's an app for our phone. And I used to have 4 volumes to do this, but we do it together. We meditate together, my wife and I, and then we get the Psalms and we sing the Psalms together. And we pray for you. And we pray for our friends and for our enemies and whatever, okay? We pray for our children and our grandchildren and so on down the line. And we pray for people who we've been asked to pray for. And that's especially powerful, and that seems to work out pretty darn well. And then after we offer our petitions, we say goodbye to God, kiss each other, and start the day. And at night, I do a nightly review. I don't do a nightly review because it feels good. I don't do a nightly review because I've ever noticed an effect in my life. But as we're talking about, once again, elimination of variables, because the big book says to do it, I do it. Because I want to eliminate, I want to use every tool that they're offering me so that I can be plugged into God, the God of my understanding, and have a life that works somehow. I pause when agitated or doubtful. And I ask for the right thought or action. And I will also ask for an inspiration if I don't know what to do. And I told you if I mentioned to the group that I was trying to solve a problem with this pair of bridal boots that I'm making, and I sat on the airplane in Denver, And I asked for an inspiration, and I got the inspiration. I couldn't believe it, man. I'm texting my wife. I'm calling her. I forgot she was in her meeting because there's a time difference. But anyway, so it's amazing that I can sit. I have a 1920s barber chair, and sometimes I will sit in my barber chair, and I'll ask for an inspiration or guidance and direction, and I get it. It's incredible. It's like, is there somebody on the other end of this line? And it turns out there is. Trying to think of what else I might do. I told you I pray before I work. And I guess that's pretty much it. So, but to have a life without meditation, it's not a life. It doesn't work. And the only thing I can conclude about it, and I'm making this up, is that God is doing soul surgery on me, right around my mind. He's going around my mind, and he's working on my soul. Because it turns out that the soul drives the human. How do we know? In the chapter, We Agnostics, when the spiritual maladies overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So I need soul surgery. I need soul muscle. And I believe that happens in that meditation. Because if my mind gets involved, I'm telling you what my mind's doing. It's like romping and stomping and snorting. It's like, whatever, shut up. But in that, God is talking to me and working on me. And while we're on the 11th step, I want to say that I wanted a spirituality that I could stand on, like this floor. You know, rock solid, no fairy tales. And there's a psalm that says, can he who made the eye not see, and he who made the ear not hear? And then I add my own, and he who made the tongue not speak. So I'll give you an example. I'm driving across this reservoir in Denver one time, and I was really, really anxious to be an artist. And I was like, God, when are you going to help me be an artist? And this is what I got, almost as loud as I'm talking right now. Mickey, it would help if you'd buy some paints and brushes. Speaking of which, I told you I was going to wear this shirt, and I brought it in so you could see what God can do through the hands of an alcoholic who can't draw a straight line with a ruler, hardly. And so, you know, it's not fair to say that we're involved in magic, but this is as close to magic as anything I can show you. And, you know, when you get to spend weeks with your nose this close to an angel or the Blessed Mother, it's a pretty good deal. It's a pretty good deal. So the point is this. Can God speak to us? What do you think? How many people think that God can speak to us? Outstanding, because it's absolutely true. What good is he going to be if he can't talk to me? I need him to talk to me. There are times, right, where I just need a little reassurance, or there's times, you know, will you help me? And my first meditation here, he dropped a real good bomb on me. It was wonderful. And made a promise to me. And it's really, really very cool. So in the hard times, I've seen people try to use, you know, physics or whatever for their higher power. And I understand that as we have the right to have any higher power we want. But I just don't think that physics is going to help us at 3:30 in the morning when the woogies come. Or when I go to him and say, will you relieve me of this bondage of self? You know what I'm saying? So I need a being to do business with. A being to do business with. Doesn't mean you have to, but I do. And I want a guy that'll talk to me, that we can talk with each other. So that's what I have to offer this morning. Nate?
First half. All right. It's interesting that it seems as almost everything we've talked about, there are opportunities for us to fall short as alcoholics, right? Meditation. If I'm not having an overwhelming, euphoric experience where I'm, where Marie's so fortunate to go, I'm failing, right? And I unfortunately slash fortunately had the same experience where I'm not one that can transcend and disappear and just come back to my body and have a grand old time. I have a mind that I will sit down and literally my intention is to be quiet. A few minutes into it, I'm thinking about like what I'm going to have for lunch tomorrow. It's like that kind of thing. Doesn't even make sense. You know, there's really no preoccupation with what it is that kind of floats in and out of my mind. But I do agree that the discipline, right, or that magic word that was thrown around very first thing Friday night, discipline, obedience, right? Oof, just bristle, right? We don't like those words. We as alcoholics resist those words. And I know I can only speak for myself here. I always try to find the easier, softer way, even with meditation, right? 3 minutes, 15 minutes, it's all the same thing, right? I mean, it's all the same thing. It's not for me. It's not. And a lot of it is just that. It's self-discipline. Because there are things that we do in the program where, and I love having these conversations with the men that I work with, where they're saying, it's just such a struggle. I just can't get comfortable. It's never getting easier. It's like a struggle every day to try to do it, right? Of course it is, right? Who wants to sit down and try to be quiet for 15 minutes when you have a mind that's 3 days down the road, right? But just imagine, like Mickey was talking about, what my day will look like if I don't put the brakes on for those 15 minutes. And that's my experience. And is it going to be easy all the time? Absolutely not, right? Do I need to have some level of self-discipline to force myself into it, even if it doesn't look and work the way I think it should? I do. Because that's the least that I can do. And I believe very similar to what Mickey was just saying in terms of, if God is the most paramount relationship in my life, 15 minutes in the morning really shouldn't be that big of an ask. Some days it is, right? I have fish to fry. I have things that I've got to take care of. God understands. Maybe he does, but I'm going to run off into my day and tear myself apart, right? I don't think God's going to suffer if I don't meditate, you know? I think a lot of the time that's the delusion that, like, God is going to be upset. I don't think that's the case at all. I think what it does is I end up paying the consequences as I walk into my day with an unchecked alcoholic mind, and the next thing you know, it's 9 p.m. and I'm exhausted, and I feel like I had all sorts of things to get done during the course of that day, and I just feel just bankrupt inside. Nothing happened worth doing. And that's really what it comes down to for me is, what is worth doing without God? And for me, the answer is nothing. And whether that's correct or not, I don't think it matters. That's just my truth. I can't pursue my life with God on the sidelines and feel like when I finally get what I'm in pursuit of, or when I finally check the boxes I need to feel accomplished, that I'll then be able to go back to God and be like, would you like to celebrate this success with me? Right? Because a lot of the time, that's how I live my life. Just driving forward, making sure I get what I think I need. And then saying, oh, God, I'm glad you're here with me. Right? But he wasn't there at all. And again, this is not point of pride stuff I'm sharing with you here. This is not best case scenario. This is not my ideal. I'm a frail, flawed human being. And there have been days where I've been on the other end of the phone where afternoon rolls around. I'm not saying every time, but where I just feel like the darkness is more present than usual, right? I mean, that's kind of been a big theme of what we've talked about. Like, this darkness inside of me is just a little more present than it maybe has been. And I'm just feeling confused and scared, and I'm not really sure why. I'm just, like, stumbling through the day. And I hate the fact, I don't hate, that's a strong word. I'm always upset when the question I get asked is, did you meditate this morning? Because I know the answer is no. And I want it to be something much more exciting to take care of, right? I want like a flashy 10 step or some great shifting inside of me. I don't want to just admit that I fell short and didn't hold up my end of the deal, right? But a lot of the time, that's what it looks like for me. And I hate that that's the answer, right? There have been days where I've literally just been kind of spiraling, and I have to go back, you know, when I'm, especially like if I'm interacting with my wife, who is also eerily similar to Marie in a sense that, you know, she's actually an alcoholic, but when she meditates, I mean, she has experiences. And I'm like, put some of that over here. I want some of that. Like, I feel like she's in a room with God when she meditates, and I'm like, looking at the tree, you know, it's like, whatever. But I guess it doesn't matter. That's the point. If I can self-discipline my way to spending 15 minutes with God in the morning, inevitably it pays off every single time I do it. And I'm not sitting here saying I do it every day. There are times that I fall short. But can I sit here and say that when I fall short and don't do that, I don't suffer? No. Every time. Anytime that I pretend that my meditation is optional, I pay the consequences. And eventually the people around me will too, unfortunately. And it just seems like, what? Meditation, you're being too hard on yourself. And I love it when people that I work with try to contest and say, 15 minutes, I mean, that's a long time, right? Maybe like, he's like, I do two or three. I think it's good, right? Maybe it is. But are you as unself-disciplined as I am, right? Why not push ourselves to be even more disciplined than we already are, right? If I can do three, maybe challenge myself to do five, right? And then maybe to seven, then to 10. It doesn't have to be, and it's not about a number. Let me make that clear. Your number is your number, whatever that ends up looking like. For me, it needs to be a significant amount of time just because it keeps me in one spot for the time that I need to be there, basically. And it's a self-discipline, is really. I mean, that's the biggest thing. If I can put, I once heard someone say that our 11th step allows us to kind of put bookends on our days. And for me, that's really true. It just keeps things upright. And if I'm able to spend that time with God, I always have better days. I wish there was magic to it. I wish I had tips and tricks for fancy meditation for you. Honestly.
I'd like to say something.
Sure. Good.
You know what's unusual about this 11th step moment we're having is that we're talking about meditation most of the time. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time, and I have very rarely ever heard somebody talk about meditation. Who knew that this thing was this immense gift? So if there's practitioners of it, they'll share it with us. And that's exactly what we're doing. But I was just remarking on the fact that we're sitting here for the most of the time encouraging people to meditate. And I know what we want to get out of meditation. We want to get, you know, a couple of angels, bare minimum, or some, you know what I mean? Because we have so much Eastern influence going on in the world now and in our country, and so our expectations are where I started out in this deal, and it gets very, very frustrating. Well, what could be more letting go than letting go of a contact with God? Because for the longest time, I thought God was like a disobedient donkey who needed to be beaten with a stick to get what I wanted. That's the way I approached it. It didn't work. Are you surprised? But you know what I'm saying? I'm going like, are you not listening to me? What is this? So to let go of it completely and say, okay, you're in charge. We're just going to sit together. I'm just going to come and be with you. And I want to give you my only thing in the meditation is I picture myself sitting in a chair like a metal folding chair. And I'm sitting in one chair, and my higher power is sitting almost knee to knee in front of me in his chair. And I say this when I go into meditation. I come to sit with you and be healed. Because there's so many ravages in my soul. I tear my soul up every day. I don't know how your day goes, but I'll promise you I tear my soul up every day with selfishness and so on, fear, right? Lack of discipline. So, God, I come to sit with you and be healed, and that's the last thing I have to say to him. And then I really have to call myself back and remember that this is not just daydreaming. I'm trying to sit with God. So I do that. I call that back a couple of times in the meditation, but really, for the most part, it really, really seems like daydreaming. But it's very effective. It just struck me. Go ahead, Nate. If you've got anything you're rocking on, please.
Well, and I just think it's so entertaining that we as alcoholics love to do things, right? kind of what we talked about, like just being is really difficult for us. Just being is really hard. We like to do. We like to have things to execute to work towards the goal, right? Give me the boxes to check. Yet for some reason, most of the things that are in here are the things we're not looking to do for action, right? It's kind of a tricky little situation. Like if I was, you know, me as an alcoholic, if someone told me that if I did 3 laps around my house every morning and I'd be able to arrest my alcoholism and have a stronger relationship with God, I'd be running around that house every morning, right? Or move this bottle back and forth 750 times and you'll have a better relationship with God. I'm all over it. It keeps me busy. I'm doing something. I don't have to be. I'm taking action. Yet the stuff in here is so difficult. And I think it is because it forces me to go to a place that is uncomfortable by its very nature, right? Discomfort. And again, the meditation process. And why wouldn't we, right? We have a fatal illness in here. Why wouldn't we do everything at our disposal? Do we have to? No, we don't. And that's the thing, right? You hear that when we first come in, like it's all optional. Do it if you want. If you don't, die, right? I mean, is what it really comes down to for me. Unfortunately, I don't have an option in this. How many people ever in the course of their recovery have wished they didn't have to do so much just to be a normal human? Both hands up all the time, right? Because for me, at times when that darkness comes back, and I'm because it's never when I'm living fully in my program and doing business with God that I start to question why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's usually when I'm off track, right? And it just seems like a challenge, and it seems like I have to do all these things just to be a normal person. There are people out there just living their lives, right? They don't have to do this. They don't have to. And I'm just looking around at all these other people, but come to find out, like it says in here, the delusion that we may be like other people has to be smashed, right? I'm not like other people. I'm me. I'm an alcoholic, and I need this process, every piece of it. And the prayer, obviously, is super important as well. I mean, I pray, and the same thing, I like to, for anyone that has never had the experience, and I'm sure there are at least a few, maybe some have had the experience, of praying out loud with people, right? Or with your significant other. For me, that's one of the most vulnerable, that was one of the most vulnerable things to break into for me. And it's honestly one of my most favorite pieces of my 11-step routine, is when I have the opportunity. My wife's a nurse, she works nights, so our schedules are kind of jacked up, for lack of a better term, right now. But when we have the opportunity to spend that time together, because I, for some reason, when I'm praying out loud and literally, you know, putting my intentions out there and praying for people, praying for my loved ones, praying for my wife when she's sitting next to me, I get so squirmy. It makes me uncomfortable. It's an exercise that usually creates a level of humility that only helps me, right? And I challenge everyone that I work with to do that. You know, if you have someone to be with in the morning, do it and have that experience. It's one thing to pray inside of my mind. Something, and I don't know, I don't know why that is, but something happens for me when I'm able to voice those things out loud. Especially, you know, in the dynamic of my wife and I, there's a lot of the time where we're the ones that we're battling the most, right? I mean, we're living in close quarters, we're both alcoholic, things can get wild at times. Not wild like the old days, but I mean, we can, you know, disagree at times, and she's usually not in a place to make me feel comfortable all the time, which is a problem, right? Because a lot of the time, I think that's her role, is to be my rock, and that's just not true. God's my rock. But to be able to just hear my true intentions out loud, you know, I pray for her well-being, her aspirations, her dreams. I pray for her relationship with God, right? And she does the same for me. And to have that experience is just, it's great, you know, for lack of a better term. And is it something that's going to make sure we never battle again? Absolutely not. But we know for a fact where each other truly stands, right? Like, I absolutely want the best for you. And I want your relationship with God to come before me, essentially. It needs to. And if you're not married, that's okay too. You know, I've done it with friends, right? Before I was married, I would have this kind of an experience with friends when I was in a situation where I could pray out loud. And I just think it's great. And I always do. I pray my prayers, and I pray for anything that's come up that's not, you know, something that's just part of my routine. And I always try to be conscious of what I'm saying, because as I've mentioned a few different times, it's really easy for me to just have my list and it becomes white noise, right? I just repeat my prayers, I go through them, and I've had experiences on Mickey's deck in Colorado with me and my wife and Marie and you, and we sit out there and we do exactly what it is we're talking about right here, and we all pray out loud. We all have the opportunity to voice our intentions and our prayers and sing the hymns and do the meditation, and it's, you know, it says in here the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it, right? And for me, I have to. God's the most important relationship in my life, and the 11th step gives me a very clear-cut way to establish and make that relationship the most important part of my day, first thing. And I speak to you in ideals in a lot of ways because, like I said, I'm not always perfect, right? It's not every day that I wake up. There are days where I wake up and I'm like, I'm late. Out the door, right? I mean, that's just humanism. Do I pay for it? Oh, yeah, right? And a lot of the times what I'll try to do is when I get to where I need to be, I'll go off somewhere and take the time because even if it's late, it's not like I missed the boat, right? Like, if I'm being conscious of giving that time to God, even if it's a little late at times, I don't think God's up there keeping score, right? And again, it's mostly so that I can not create chaos throughout the course of my day and that I can hopefully be available for the things that God needs from me. And that I need from God. So, in terms of the AM portion, I think that's about all I have to say.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And of course, we have the directions in the book on awakening. Let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So now I'd like to lob a grenade in the middle of the room and talk about religion. Hey, I gave you a little bit of this, now we're going to do a little bit of that. If circumstances warrant, I'll just lead in this way. We ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. So if I was to say, I'll make the statement that Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religion. What do you think? Is that a fair statement? And that's very important. Pardon?
I don't know. I think in New York that they deemed people that listen to four steps or two steps as priests. They couldn't talk.
Well,
for like a case.
Let's just say we're not in New York for the sake of discussion.
Holy
moly, this is great. Thank you, John. I'm really... All right. So, that aside for a moment.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. So, we say AA is not a religion, right? Tell me if we do not treat it as if it is in many cases. Do you think that's a fair statement? I've been approached twice in here to marry people. And I'm going like, you know, because what people are doing is they're going online and getting the Captain Whizbang, you know, minister's thing, and they're going and marrying people. So what happens in here is that we develop this sort of sense of comfort. We nestle in here, and that's okay. We got to start somewhere. But I would suggest that we are being invited into the mainstream of life. And in the mainstream of life, on Saturdays or Sundays, people get up, put on some nice clothes, and they go to church. Now, I have been corrected in doing this. But I can tell you that when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I may have shared earlier, I abandoned my faith. I just left my church. I spent the first 10 years in AA sober without my church. And it kept banging on me. You know, they kept using the phrase, God as we understand him, God as we understand him. You know, and I'm like hanging out, and I'm saying, after 10 years, there's a lag time for you. who is the God of my understanding? And so I dealt with that. And I said, okay, this is the God of my understanding. And I started to do a U-turn. I had lost my faith. I just had lost my faith. I had the institution there, but I didn't have the faith anymore. So I went and asked God for it. And I got my faith. Isn't that not a nice thing? But I had to ask for it. And so here came, and I have three kids, and I had three little kids. My daughter was 14 years old at the time when I started to make this U-turn. And the boys were like 8 and 10. So it came Christmas time, and so we had the presents under the tree, and everybody's getting their presents, and if you had like an excitement meter, it'd be like about on a 7. And everybody's excited because they're getting their presents. And then I said, well, and my wife, as I may have mentioned to you, was raised atheist. I mean seriously straight atheist by her family. And if I didn't, that's true. Now, she wasn't invested in it. She had been raised that way. So there just wasn't any God. I mean, that's the end, right? And so anyway, so I'm asking my atheist wife and my pagan children. Thank you, Mickey. Would you like to go to Christmas Mass with me? Would you like to go to church for Christmas? And they go, yeah, because they had no clue. The hell, right? So we're going to go off to church. So we go to church. And I'm coming home, so inside of me, I'm like, yes, this is really good. I feel so good that I'm coming home. And I don't know what they're feeling, but I'll tell you, when we came out of that church, if you ran an excitement meter, it would be pegging over at 10. You would have had to be Ray Charles to miss what just happened. It was palpable. And so I got this thing, and I went, oh, my God. We sent our children, when they were little, to the Jewish Community Center for preschool because it was a great preschool. All right, so they're over there, and our son, our middle son, Neil, is like learning all the songs in Hebrew. And he's fully invested in this. You're gonna hate this story, I promise. So Neil is all wrapped on this thing. Now, when he goes to somebody's birthday party, outside the tribe, if you will, they're not Jewish, Neil will sing it in Hebrew, happy birthday to you. And so I had to have this moment with my son to sit down and explain to him, Neil, you're not Jewish. Now, my son Neil is like the most tender-hearted, wonderful person. And he looked at me with his great big cow eyes, and he said, well, Dad, what are we? And I said, Neil, we're Republican. It was horrible, and his little soul just died right now. Asshole to the end. So I had to do this entire shift in the family, I felt, and I got my son squared away, and they joined the church, and I, you know, and my daughter was 14, and she's going, I'm not having this. What are you talking about? And I said, well, okay. And then we went along for a while, and then I said to Amy, I tell you what, give me a summer, and I will teach you what our faith teaches. And if at the end of that summer you don't want to do this, you have my blessing to not do it. And inside I'm going, come on, God. Because what happens, like, picture this for a second. Why am I even bringing this up? First of all, because I think it is important. It is an opportunity for us to express our relationship with God, regardless of what church you're in, regardless of what faith. Okay? And it can really build on that. And we can find greater community than just being in Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon or CA. But what happens when you're a child is, are you going to then, as a child, have your first experience of a God in Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you going to grow up with not any sense of who you are or where you are in the world because mom and dad just don't do this? So I don't think it's really fair to the children. And I've had people that I've sponsored say, well, I've never been in a church. I've never experienced this. What shall I do? And I said, go into your neighborhood and find a church and go. and sit down, see what it is. Doesn't I don't I'm not saying what church, whatever church you want. So I want to thank you for your attention and your consideration and listening to that. But there's an enormous prejudice many times in Alcoholics Anonymous against organized religion, and it seems like we're looking for agreement in that. You know, I don't have anything to do with it. Well, yeah, and so it's like maybe you're missing an 11th step opportunity. That's all. So thank you for listening.
I'd like to add on to that.
Please.
I think that's such a... Ooh, it's a barn burner, boy. You have these kinds of conversations in normal AA, people are walking out the door. So it's good that everybody's
and not
still
anybody
here.
Left. I'm so
yeah.
proud of
And the beautiful news is it's not even a promotion, right? Not even at all. It's just experience. And I think it's relevant to talk about where I had my first inventory and inventory since have been riddled with organized religion in the spirit of transparency. They've just been in there. The people mostly. Not the actual religions, not the principles that are underlying, mostly my interactions with the people that I associate with those faiths, right? Because we like to judge the forest for the trees, at least I do. And if people make me feel weird, if you give me the heebie-jeebies, I want nothing to do with your little party you're having over there kind of thing. That's how I saw it. And but then as the road got more narrow, right, because that's what happens to us inevitably in Alcoholics Anonymous, the road just continues to feel more narrow. And I started to feel more and more isolated and scared. And as I mentioned Friday night, as I started to identify more and more darkness within myself, I just had this overwhelming, and it wasn't like someone came knocking on my door. It was this overwhelming desire internally to seek more, to find God more, to go in the direction of whatever it was that I needed to be doing, to get some real firepower behind me so that I can actually have a shot at battling this evil I feel I'm up against, right? And I literally, I just was not having it. I had, and in hindsight, I had completely conditional views of the way I was working my program. I was just like, I'll do all this. It's like the Meatloaf song, right? I'll do anything, but not that, right? And I had already made the decision, right?
Meatloaf.
I'll do anything but that. And I never voiced that out loud, but I had convictions that I would never do this. I would never join that religion. Or that religion, or I wouldn't be a part of that. The barn burner for me is that I was raised in religion. So it was like my soul was riddled with this stuff anyway. I don't know if that's the case for everybody, but like, it was in me. It was in me already, and I was so mad about that. Literally, I had pages of inventory on my parents for raising me in a religion. Because I felt like it spoiled my life and made me feel guilty about everything and ruined my perspective. And come to find out, I was feeling guilty about the things I was doing because they were wrong. You know what I mean?
Go figure.
And I actually like held on to that resentment for a long time, that they had spoiled me, right? Spoiled my life. This is not an easy road either. I mean, I fought this thing uphill for years and just kicking and screaming. And
Mickey, can I say amen on that?
Mickey witnessed a lot of that where... Oh, I was so conflicted to head in the direction of God, but I'm actually seeking God. It was the strangest place to be. And if we had more time, I'd tell the full story. But anyway, a lot of those walls have come down for me, right? And come to find out, like a lot of what I was actually taught as a child is pretty darn close to what it is we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous on a level of a principle. I just aspire to be a good person, you know. I want to live disciplined. I want to be closer to God. And I want to be able to have a relationship with that God that can actually help me go to battle in the real world. Because there's some darkness out there. And I can't go to battle with that darkness relying on a doorknob. I'm just saying that, you know. And it takes what it takes. We all need to make a beginning. But the reality is, and what it encourages us in here, and it's just so important that the big book is not an end-all for what we do here. It's a springboard. And they encourage us in there. Go elsewhere, especially in the realm of the 11th step in your relationship with God. You have to go further. That doesn't mean necessarily religion. It doesn't mean this religion or that religion. But it does tell us to go and seek and find and explore, even if it's uncomfortable, right? Because that's what it was for me. Like, I ended up being pushed in a direction where I was like... why, God? Why would you push me in this direction? You know it's where I don't want to go, right? It's I don't want to go there. I just don't. And as it would turn out, I tried, like, just with everything in me to resist it. And I just got so crippled, like, in my life. I felt like I was dying. I just literally felt like I was dying sober because I was resisting what God wanted from me so hard. And as soon as I just actually gave in and opened my mind, I'm not saying I jumped in, I just opened my mind to the prospect that this may be something I could consider, like a second step, right? And had my own experience. And I think that's the beautiful thing, is we all have the opportunity to have our own experiences with these things. As long as my mind is open to it. My mind is shut, I could very well be preventing myself from having a relationship with God that God really wants with me. And that's what I found from my experience, is exactly what I was doing. I was preventing myself from having a more intimate relationship with God. And it's still kind of the same thing. Like, I don't feel like I'm locked in with God like this all the time. You know, do I feel like I have more firepower? Absolutely, right? Which is an amazing thing. But at the same time, life still happens. Life is still horrifying and scary at times. And a lot of the time, I still don't rely on God the same way I would have, you know, 15 years ago. But anyway.
I want to share some. Thank you, Nate. I want to share something that we heard in church this morning. It turns out my last name is Musset, and it's like my son is a Catholic priest. Our baby, he's not a baby anymore, but he's a Catholic priest. He's been a Catholic priest for 10 years, and he did one of these heritage deals where you go back, ancestry things, and found out that we were Protestant. We were Huguenots out of France. And Father this morning was telling this story, and it was like this amazing. It was this little Bostonian monk in there laying this thing out. It's a World War II story about this little town in France with 3,500 people in it, and in 1940, and they were Huguenots. And so they had a minister who was really kind of bolted in as a good man, and they took in 6,000 Jewish children and save their lives. And from 1940 through X number of years till the end of the war, these Huguenots are over there helping Jewish people survive, getting them over the border into Switzerland. Nobody has a corner on goodness. We all have a piece of the truth. But all I'm suggesting is there may be a way to express our relationship and have it added to. I sponsor a guy who's a devout Lutheran, and he goes to church every Sunday, but the quality of his life, you understand what I'm saying? It rounds out. It gives him more, and he tells me what his preacher preached there, and, you know, and I tell him the crazy thing my son says, and you'd have to see my son. My son wears a man bun and a huge beard. He's twice tattooed. He's a piece of work, and he has the campus ministry for the University of Colorado. And the kids love him. When he first took up his job, he stood up on the roof of the student center and rapped. He's nuts. He's like the Pied Piper. But my point is, all this is available to us. All we got to do is open the door. Do we have to do it? Hell no, we don't have to do it. Nobody's going to tell us what to do. We're just geared that way. But it's just to be put on the table. Now, we have a few extra minutes because we were raffling and so on, so I'd like to go on just a little bit longer. So we have our nightly review. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. It took me well over a year to be able to do a nightly review or more. And when I first got sober, the reason was I could not avoid morbid self-beating. When I would try to review what I'd done in the day, man, I would pull out a cat of nine tails and wail myself. So I said, you know, and it says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. But anyway, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? What I do is I just take a picture. Was I resentful? Oh, here's a picture of where I was resentful today. And I, you know, the other questions, yeah, there's a snapshot of that. Pardon me, the whole thing takes less than 2 minutes. And it's just bang, bang, bang. Do I owe an apology? I never answered that yes. I'm kidding. All right. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed? And incidentally, Marie and I do our nightly review together, too. I read the questions out loud, and we answer them in silence together. And if we have an apology, I'll apologize to her. Get it in. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Nate pointed out that in the 10th step, it's spot check during the day inventory. Now, what this is doing is it's asking is, did you do your 10th step today? Have I kept something to myself which should have been discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? Absolutely, right? Thank you. Now, this question, and I don't think we need to answer this, but it's just here together. But I just think it's worth pondering because I've never, ever had an answer to this. Okay. So it says, were we kind and loving towards all? That's one question, and it's straight up. Then the next question is, what could we have done better? Do they mean better in being kind and loving towards all, or just better in general? Whatever. I ponder that. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? I have never been able to answer those two questions. And here's why. I work pretty much alone in my boot shop. You know, Marie's doing whatever she's doing, and she handles taxes and a lot of other stuff, and she helps me sometimes in doing the boots. But am I thinking of you as my customer when I'm making boots, or am I, most of the time, I think I'm just in there thinking about me. But I haven't been able to answer the question. I just don't know. So I'm not out like doing a soup kitchen and taking care of others and thinking about that during the day. Whatever. Okay. And I'm saying, Guy, will you please help me answer this question? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness. And when we're doing it together, I say we ask God's forgiveness for what we've done wrong in this day. Just a little extension. And we inquire what corrective measure should be taken. Now, I don't sit there and wait for him to answer the question, what corrective measure should be taken. I asked him the question, I'm going to bed. And I presume that somewhere or other he's going to tell me what corrective measure should be taken. Again, I'm not the standard. I'm sure that maybe there's a better way to do that. But that's what I do. I know people, I have people that I sponsor who write all of this out at the end of every day. I would rather be shot. All I need is one more bloody extended exercise in my day, and I'm ready to put the pistol in the mouth. And my sponsor, Gary, we dueled one time at his home conference weekend like this. He said he writes out every 10th step before he'll 10th step. And I say the book doesn't say to do that, so we're like glaring each other, sponsor and sponsee, and them. Oh, God. Anyway, I really truly believe in economy of effort. This is tough stuff to be doing. I don't want to be adding extra things. Now, if you have to do it, why not? Rock and roll. But anyway, that's for me.
And how fortunate are we that we have so many safety nets in place, right? I mean, literally, this when I started to be more vigilant with my 10 step and keep that list I talked about in my phone, my nightly reviews got pretty uneventful, right? Because I'm not living two separate lives that I'm applying these two different tools to. It's the same life, right? So in theory, if I'm keeping track of the things throughout my day as they come up, it's a pretty slick nightly review, right? And if things do come up that maybe I missed, it's given me another opportunity to recheck the day so that I don't kick anything under the rug that will inevitably go missing because I forget things, right? And the next thing you know, it comes out sideways 3 days later. That's where I run into problems. So for me, it's nice to have that option. And if there is something that comes up, right, especially, you know, in that question, did I do my 10th step? Is there something that I haven't discussed with someone? What I'll do usually is I'll just add it to my 10th step list. because I know I'm going to discuss it, right? Even if it's, you know, during our weekly call, or if I call the next day, if it's something that really needs to get out there soon, I just add it to my list. Because I don't know about you, I don't like my capacity to keep track of things in my head, right? It's not there. If I tried to just keep my list of my 10 steps in my mind, by the time I got to my meeting, I would just, I have no idea what happened, right? It's all just buried, right? And eventually it'll come out, hopefully in a 4-step 3 years down the road after I terrorize everyone for years, right? And, you know, is whatever. The reality is it's not. We have to also keep in mind we can't take ourselves too seriously.
What?
We got to take it easy at times. And I don't mean let up on the spiritual program of action, but I mean use the tools to be constructive. We have to be gentle with ourselves at the same time. It's so easy to use these tools. There was a period of time for me that if I didn't physically write out a nightly review on paper every night, I felt like I was falling short and just missing the mark. That's just my experience. That's not true. I believe that to be untrue now. If it works better, like Mickey said, to write it out and that's how you know, process, do it. If you want to just put your big book on your pillow, crack it open and read through the questions and make note if anything comes up, do it that way. Right? If you know the questions in your head, do it that way. Just make sure you do it, right? That's the most important thing, because I can sometimes get sucked into the trap that I'm doing a real solid 10-step. I don't need to look at that nightly review. I'm pretty vigilant, right? Again, we have all these resources available to us. I want it all. I need it all. Why wouldn't I, right? Well, because I'm slothy. I'm lazy. I don't like to do things. Path of least resistance. But the reality is it's another one of those self-disciplines for the other end of the day, right? And these pages, I mean, pages 84 through 88 in our book are just solid gold. I mean, the whole book is solid, but 84 to 88, you want to talk about a recipe for a day, it's in there. I mean, it is in there. If there were, you know, pages in the book that you want to memorize and have fresh and active in your life, those are the ones right there. I mean, the tools in there are just unbelievable. And the fact is that it's only 4 pages long, right? 4 or 5, whatever. But the information that's in there, it clearly, and again, it tells us we need to go further, right? We need to expand it. Because if this is the alpha and the omega of my life and my relationship with God, I'm going to have a very unsatisfactory life, I think, right? I just offer that. Because is this my favorite book on planet Earth? Probably one of the top two. But if I pretend like this is my only resource for life, I will not have the opportunity to live an abundant life. And they say it all through it. You've got to go further. This is a springboard, right? So anyway, good.
Thanks, Nate. I think we're going to stop here, and we're scheduled to start again at